All right, everybody, Badlands food. I've been thinking about getting a dog. With my little family, we're about to introduce a dog, I believe, at some point here. And I have an interest in how we're going to be treating said dog. And it occurs to me, you know, that many dogs suffer from health issues. And with Badlands food, actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health. She's looking at their food. What she discovered is that the way many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that could be wrecking our dog's health. And this is true even for many premium brands. Fortunately, she found that by just adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone can do the same thing to see incredible changes in their dog's health. It caught my attention, and as I'm about to get a dog, I think that I'm going to use this service, so I thought I'd share it with the audience as well. I know many of you have dogs. If you want to keep your dog healthy and happy, go to badlandsfood.com/darktopic and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's badlandsfood.com/darktopic to check it out. badlandsfood.com. Hello out there, and good morning. This is Waking Up with Jack Luna. I'm your host, Jack Luna. It's 6 in the morning. Because Dark Topic hasn't been as consistent as I wanted it to be, I am doing 2 additional episodes on Tier 13 of Patreon every month. I wasn't able to keep up and stay as publicly relevant as I wanted to. So I figured I would do something free-flowing, and hopefully it's entertaining for you. I plan on doing this maybe once a week. If it gets better in the next couple of minutes, quick, I might even just stop this right now because this is a nightmare. Suddenly, this is stepping into a nightmare with Jack Luna. This is not waking up. Anyways, I've been trying to get sober for a while. I've had this focus on it. Like, if I can quit drinking and smoking cigarettes and whatever, then my mind will clear up and I'll be able to get rid of this horrible feeling I always have in my chest. I have anxiety, I guess. And all through my life, mainly really through my 20s, I think I did a lot of damage to myself psychically and like emotionally, spiritually. I worked in a group home for like 10 years, and I think I should have left about 2 years in, but I got stuck. I think it was because of the money or the lack of money, like a paycheck to paycheck mentality, but also because I began to like rely on the people that I worked there with as like family and the kids and stuff as well. And I thought that they needed me to be there, which is a mistake. I mean, there's always new people who will work there and take your place, but I had this weird mindset, and then kids, you know, they would pass away, and there was just like, I don't know, I got stuck there for a decade. As I take a sip of my, what am I drinking? It's not green tea, because that gives me the shakes, because I'm very sensitive, apparently. Some kind of herbal tea. And I've been trying to work, I was trying to drown it in alcohol. When I got out here, we moved out here about 10 years ago, and suddenly I had free time. I didn't have to work as hard as I was working anymore. We were able to get a mortgage that was like, you know, $300 a month, and my girl was working, and I suddenly had this free time, and I was told, you know, just relax. I'm like, whoa, relax. And I started drinking, and I had always drank. Mainly it was like on the weekends or a couple after work, but now it was like 10 in the morning with people out here, you know, and sitting at the bar and just talking and playing pool. And I was like, wow, I figured it out. all I gotta do is drink all the time and I feel good. I literally thought that. I remember saying that. I think I was probably about 30. It's probably 31. All I gotta do is keep drinking and I'll be okay. Then I feel good. And I did. As much as I could until I had kids and slowed down a bit. Sped up in the evenings when I had free time again. But what I had done, I realize now, is I was clouding my mind. I was standing still. The damage was just waiting for me, whatever that damage is from my life. I mean, I think the main thing for me is to learn how to just like start letting things go. But it's hard to let things go when you don't even know that you're holding on to them. And I think there's a lot of things that I'm holding on to that I'm not even really that aware of. So what I've been doing is I've been trying to meditate in the mornings. And I discovered something through reading about meditation and all that that I wanted to share. It's something called the fourth moment. So you have the past, you have the present, and there's the future, and then there's the fourth moment, which is, it's hard to explain. But in meditation, and I don't really understand it, there's a place you go if you do it enough, and I haven't done it enough, but I know what they're talking about, I think, where you're just in the you're in the now. It's not the present so much as it is the now. The present is constantly going away, right? And bleeding into the future, and the past is slipping behind us. But the fourth moment is always available. You split kind of from your ego. You will feel this moment of like being haunted, or a long moment of being haunted, and it's kind of scary if you do it right, which I'm not sure if I've gotten to the point where I'm doing this right. I think worrying about doing it right is the thing that's holding me back from doing it right. But you let go of everything and it's just nothing. You just feel nothing. And you feel kind of haunted at times, like fear, and it'll snap you back. And they say that that's your ego. You're being haunted by your own ego. And in the fourth moment, you know, you're just nothing. And it's nice. And when you come out of it, the thoughts that normally reoccur and that are bothering you and all that, it feels like you can kind of take them one at a time rather than getting jumped by them. Like they don't pile onto you as much. Like you can sort through them a little bit better by giving yourself that moment in the fourth moment each day. And I'll continue to update you on how I'm doing with the fourth moment. Not so hot so far, but I'm trying. I wanted to read something from Jurassic Park. I've been reading Jurassic Park by Michael Crichton to my family each night while they go to sleep. It's been a while now we've been reading it, but there was a part the other night that goes well with what I was just talking about. He's talking about chaos theory here, so I wanted to share this with you. A quote from Jurassic Park. Not sure if I'm even allowed to do this, but we're living in the fourth moment where nothing matters, you know? So in this scene, you know the character played by Jeff Goldblum? Life will find a way. He is talking to the other guy, Grant, one of the paleontologists, I think, the main one, I guess. And he's trying to explain to him something about chaos theory. And I just want to read this to you. I thought it was really interesting. Quote, "Fractals are a kind of geometry associated with a man named Mandelbrot. Unlike ordinary Euclidean geometry that everybody learns in school, squares and cubes and spheres, fractal geometry appears to describe real objects in the natural world. Mountains and clouds are fractal shapes, so fractals are probably related to reality somehow. Mandelbrot found a remarkable thing with his geometric tools. He found that things looked almost identical at different scales. For example, a big mountain seen from far away has a certain rugged mountain shape. If you get closer and examine a small peak of the big mountain, it will have the same mountain shape. In fact, you can go all the way down the scale to a tiny speck of rock. Seen under a microscope, it will have the same basic fractal shape as the big mountain." Grant says, "I don't really see why this is worrying you." He yawns and smells the sulfur fumes of the volcanic steam. "It's a way of looking at things," Malcolm said. "Mandelbrot found a sameness from the smallest to the largest. And this sameness of scale also occurs for events. Consider cotton prices. There are good records of cotton prices going back more than 100 years, When you study fluctuations in cotton prices, you find that the graph of price fluctuations in the course of a day looks basically like the graph for a week, which looks basically like the graph for a year, or for 10 years. And that's how things are. A day is like a whole life. You start out doing one thing, but end up doing something else. Plan to run an errand, but never get there. And at the end of your life, your whole existence has that same haphazard quality too. Your whole life has the same shape as a single day. I guess that's one way to look at things, Grant says. No, Malcolm says, it's the only way to look at things. At least the only way that is true to reality. You see, the fractal idea of sameness carries within it an aspect of recursion, a kind of doubling back on itself, which means that events are unpredictable, that they can change suddenly and without warning. But we have soothed ourselves into imagining sudden change as something that happens outside the normal order of things. An accident like a car crash, or beyond our control like a fatal illness, we do not conceive of sudden, radical, irrational change as built into the very fabric of existence. Yet it is. And chaos theory teaches us that straight linearity, which we have come to take for granted in everything from physics to fiction, simply does not exist. Linearity is an artificial way of viewing the world. Real life isn't a series of interconnected events occurring one after another like beads strung on a necklace. Life is actually a series of encounters in which one event may change those that follow in a wholly unpredictable, even devastating way. End quote. So I just thought that gave me chills when I heard all that, especially the part, you know, about the mountain and the tip of the mountain being the same as the entire mountain and then a little piece of rock being the same as the... I've always looked at life as one big mosaic, you know, like from the start to the finish, every day being different and all building towards what the entire thing looks like a ramping up of evolution of yourself through your life. But in reality, he's right. And I've noticed this. Every day is a chance to have a new life. Instead of sleeping in every day, you get up early. That changes that day. And the change in that day can change the rest of your life if you get up early every day going forward. You drink in the evenings to relax. This was a big one for me. It's like, well, I'm not doing anything else, so I might as well have a few drinks, right? What else would I be doing is what I would say to myself. Anything. You could be doing anything else. And the choice to drink that evening and just watch some sports and act like, okay, this is what people do, right? Like, this is normal. It screws up my next morning. If I'm hungover, I'm not going to get up early and get the good start on the day, right? So, like, every day, the way if you get into a routine of your day that is healthy, you get up early, you meditate, you maybe write a bit or journal, whatever you're into, even just sit and think and drink some tea and stretch your legs, whatever, get ready for the day. The things that are going to happen in that day, you're going to be in the right mindset to deal with them in a way that's going to end up working out for you. You get up all hungover and meet the day. By noon, you're already thinking about having another drink to be able to get through this shit. And you're just kind of like sleepwalking through it. If you have kids, I mean, you don't have the same energy for your kids that you should have. If you have a partner, people in your life, you know, that you're interacting with, I mean, they'll notice and that will affect their lives, the quality of their lives, if you're just not all there with it. Every single day is a chance to change your entire life. And I didn't know that. Anyways, so with these, I'm really uncomfortable with this. I don't even know if I'm going to be able to do this, if I'm going to put this up, but I think I will, just because you never know unless you try. I hear comedians and, you know, mainly comedians like Joey Diaz or Theo Von or Bill Burr or, you know, just kind of do these kind of podcasts. And often I'm listening and I'm like, okay, this isn't funny so much as they're just working through their thoughts and trying to find material and all that. And I feel like I could do the same thing for Dark Topic with this. And I'm just giving it a go. So the next thing I kind of wanted, and I'm going to be much more structured than these other podcasts, I think, because I'm super insecure and I need to be prepared. You know what that is? False humility. And I've been working on it. So I've always known this, but if you show humility and you are self-deprecating and you can, you know, you tear yourself down in front of people and all that, I don't like to admit this, but I'm not looking for, you know, people to be like, no, no, you are smart, or no, you know, you're doing really good. I really do feel, I don't think I like myself a lot of the time. Anyways, false humility is pretending to be a a humble person at times. And I feel like I am, but often I will use it as a way to disarm people. You can't attack me if I'm already attacking myself. It's a protection mechanism. If I feel like the podcast isn't going well and I say, this is stupid, I'm an idiot, this sucks, if you say it, then it doesn't hurt, right? So that's what that is. And I'm working on a pure humility. This false humility stuff, you'll see it a lot with actors who will act like ultra humble and like they don't know how famous they are and all that. And that's all bullshit. Of course they know how famous they are. They don't need to celebrate it, but they also don't need to show this false humility to gain even more attention for being a humble person, you know? It's they're like doubling down, and it's a trick. If I sit here going, I don't know, I think I'm terrible. I don't even know why you guys listen to the podcast. I don't think I'm a writer. I think that I'm more just like a person who is able to express themselves, blah, 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 as I'm unable to express myself. See, just did it in it. That might have been real. Ooh, this sucks. Okay. The next portion of the program, what I'd like to do is read some old news. So on this day back in 1986, there was a thing that happened in Cincinnati, Ohio. And for a long time, I've been thinking about doing this kind of podcast where it's where I read the Wikipedia. And there are some podcasts out there that won't tell you that they're doing it, but they are reading the Wikipedia on whatever case that they're covering. I know this because I read the Wikipedia when I'm covering a case, and I can tell that they've covered the arc of the story from the angle that Wikipedia has it laid out, the sequence of events. Sometimes they even use the wording that's on Wikipedia. But Wikipedia is public domain, so I'm okay to read it. I am going to read some old news on this weekly or monthly or whatever kind of podcast this turns out to be. Kind of like this day in whatever. I mean, I might not keep up with that, but for this one, I am going back to September 27th of 1986. It is currently September 27th of 2021. And I'm going to put a little music in behind this and show you how to really read from the Wikipedia. Rosetta Stone, everybody. You know, for a long time, I've been wanting to go to Japan, but the thing holding me back is that I'm intimidated by the language. And that's why I've been going pretty hard at the Rosetta Stone service. I want to be able to take my girl to Japan, a place that she's always wanted to go, and suddenly just start speaking fluent Japanese at the restaurant. That's my goal. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program available on a desktop or as an app, and it truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It's been a trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users, 25 languages offered. It's fast language acquisition. Rosetta Stone immerses you in a bunch of ways. There's an intuitive process where you pick up the language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. They have the speech recognition feature. Built-in true accent gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. It's convenient, and it's an amazing value, especially with this offer here. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Dark Topic listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Today. All right, everybody, Zippix toothpicks. This is something that I use all the time. So this episode is brought to you by Zippix nicotine toothpicks. Zippix brings you a totally satisfying, convenient, and great-tasting way to curb your nicotine cravings. Now you can get your nicotine fix anytime, anywhere, without having to rely on smoking or vaping. Zippix toothpicks give you an easier, better, and more discreet way to get your fix. They're available in 6 great long-lasting flavors, and they have options in 2 milligrams and 3 milligrams of nicotine. Zippix are perfect for flights, sporting events, restaurants, podcasting, literally anywhere that you smoke or vape, where that's banned. They're also one of the most cost-effective nicotine products on the market. Zippix also offers caffeine and B12-infused toothpicks if you're not a nicotine user, or if you're trying to get away from your nicotine habit. Zippix have already helped tens of thousands of customers, including myself, to get their nicotine fix without needing to inhale smoke or vape oils. Make your lungs happy and try Zippix, nicotine-infused toothpicks. So ditch the cigarettes, ditch the vape, and get some nicotine-infused toothpicks at ZippixToothpicks.com today. Get 10% off your first order by using the code DARKTOPIC at checkout. Your lungs will be glad you did. Must be 21 years of age or older to order. Warning, nicotine is an addictive chemical. Zip more, smoke less with Zippix, nicotine toothpicks. All right, so today we're going to be reading about Balloon Fest 86. This was a stunt coordinated by Balloon Art, a Los Angeles-based company headed by a guy named Treb Heining. He spent 6 months preparing it. There was a rectangular structure the size of a city block. It measured 250 feet by 150 feet and was like 3 stories high. And then this was covered with a piece of net, a woven mesh material, and was set up to hold the balloons on a southwest quadrant of Public Square in Cleveland. Inside the structure, 2,500 students and other volunteers spent many hours filling balloons with helium. The United Way originally planned to release 2 million balloons, but eventually stopped at just 1.4 million, which is a lot of friggin' balloons. Children in the area were selling sponsorships to benefit the United Way at the price of $1 for every 2 balloons. So this is this big stupid balloon event in Cleveland in 1986. They wanted to release 2 million balloons into the air. Hooray! And I have the Wikipedia right here, so I'll continue to read it to you. I don't know why I'm trying to freeball here when I have all my research already done for me. On Saturday, September 27th, 1986, with a rainstorm approaching, organizers decided on an early release of the balloons at about 1:50 p.m. Eastern. Close to 1.5 million balloons rose up from Cleveland's Public Square surrounding Terminal Tower and surpassing a world record set the previous year on the 30th anniversary of Disneyland. Disney only cares about money. I don't know if you guys know that, but Disney is a trap for families. Disguised as like this big, most wonderful place on earth. Most manipulative place on earth. It's like Disney World to me is like a big child. It's not a child molester. It's just like a big molester who molests the money out of your pockets and uses your children against you or your childhood against you. I find a lot of people that continue to go back to Disney that for the nostalgia, they hooked them when they were kids. And now they're older and they realize their lives kind of are too serious. So they put on the Mickey ears or the Minnie ears a couple of times a year and go there and run or waddle all through the park and, you know, this look in their eyes like they're forever a princess. But anyways, we're going on here. Typically, a helium-filled latex balloon that is released outdoors will stay up long enough to fully deflate before it descends to Earth. But with these Balloon Fest balloons, what happened was they collided into a front of cool air and rain, and then they dropped back to the ground, still inflated. So they had tried to rush this thing because there was a storm coming in. They let all the balloons go. Okay, there's a storm coming. Let them go. And the storm comes in and pushes all the balloons back down to Earth. They're supposed to go all the way up and just pop. And then all this plastic drops from the sky into the into the lake, which I don't know why that wasn't a big deal. It's a lot of balloons. If you look at pictures of this, it looks like, you know, a horde of locusts descending upon the city or ascending from the city, then descending back down upon it. I know what ascending and descending means. It's basically the point of that whole little situation that's happening still right now for some fucking reason. Anyways, the balloons come back down and they're laying all over the place. They clog the land and waterways of Northeast Ohio. And in the days following this event, balloons are reported everywhere, washed ashore, even on the Canadian side of Lake Erie. Two fishermen who had gone out on September 26th were reported missing on the day of this event. Rescuers who went out to try to find them spotted their boat anchored at the west edge of Edgewater Park. A Coast Guard search and rescue helicopter crew had difficulty reaching the area because of the asteroid field of balloons. A search and rescue boat crew tried to spot the fishermen floating in the lake, but they couldn't see them because the balloons made it impossible to spot anything but balloons. I mean, if you're looking for a little head bobbing in the water and there's a million balloons in the water, you're not going to be able to see the people who are drowning in the water. On September 29th, the Coast Guard suspended the search and the fishermen's bodies eventually washed up on shore. The wife of one of the fishermen sued the United Way of Cleveland for $3.2 million and later settled. Balloons landing in a pasture in Medina County, Ohio, spooked a bunch of Arabian horses, which made them suffer permanent injuries as well. Their owner sued for $100,000 in damages. I'm going to look up, since we're on Wikipedia, let's go for a little ride here. What is an Arabian horse? Oh, a beautiful horse. Yeah, they're with a distinctive head shape and high tail carriage, the Arabian is one of the most easily recognizable horse breeds in the world. Oh, it's just a regular horse. Throughout history, Arabian horses are spread around the world by both war and trade. Okay, so this is just like a regular horse. A bunch of horses got hurt. Donkeys. I've been looking into donkeys lately, and they're super intelligent, and I didn't realize that. Because you call someone a donkey. Maybe it's because of the you know, the noises they make. But donkeys, there was this video I saw recently of this little girl, or this young woman now. When she was a little girl, she had raised this donkey and been around it. And I guess she went out to school and she comes back. And the donkey sees her and it's going, doing its eon, coming up to her and just rubs up against her neck. And he's just so relaxed. Like he had anxiety of where she was this entire time. And he's just like so happy to see her and very touching. I think if I was to get anything at this point, when it comes to animals, I'm going to get two donkeys. They're apparently very social creatures. And if they are alone, you know, they will be, they'll get pretty depressed. But anyways, we're not here to talk about donkeys. You might be saying to yourself, we're listening to a donkey. And that's that false humility kicking in again. Burke Lakefront Airport had to shut down a runway for half an hour after balloons landed there. Traffic collisions were reported. Drivers were swerving to avoid slow motion blizzards of multicolored orbs. And as they were taking their eyes off the road to gawk at the overhead spectacle, they were slamming into fire hydrants. And, you know, it was a hell of a day. In a 1988 copy of the Guinness Book of World Records, this was recognized as the largest ever mass balloon release. Anyways, on this day, 1986, some people in Cleveland decided it'd be a good idea to release 1.5 million balloons just before a storm started. And it completely fucked up everything in that city for weeks. Fun. Well, the final portion of this Waking Up with Jack Luna experiment here, I'm going to take a call in. So I'd appreciate if you guys, hey guys, let me just ask you a quick favor. Stop here for a second. Pause. Hard stop. Be really doing the podcast solid if you followed the link that I have in the notes. To leave a voicemail. It'd be a question or a comment about the show or whatever, something for me to respond to at the end of these Waking Up with Jack Lunas. I got two. I'm just going to read the one for now. The other one was kind of garbled. I didn't understand what they were saying. But this one, I did. So let's play this.
Hey, Jack. This is Stefan from Nipawa. Long-time caller, first-time listener. That might be wrong. Anyways, I know you've said you've been on this sobriety change of lifestyle, and it's also something I'm going through myself for now 2.5 years. Just wondering, what are you doing for yourself to deal with anxiety, depression, you know, all the mind fuckery that beginning sobriety brings? I don't, like, for myself, I tried a ton of things and until I found things that work, and just wondering what you've been going through that, you know, seems to work for you, or what things you want to try, and what are your fallbacks to, you know, deal with the shitstorm of getting sobriety. Anyways, have a good one.
Thanks, Stefan, for calling in. I covered all this for the most part, but I'll say the things that I do, I spend a lot of time with my kids, hammered, and I find that beating them, I spend a lot of time with my kids. If you have kids, I mean, that's great. I've been going fishing lately, which I find helps. But the main thing is getting off to a good start for me so far. It's getting up early. It's doing some meditation. It's just spending some time quietly with myself, planning what I'm going to do for the day, and just being in the moment for a bit, that fourth moment that I was talking about, this nowness, this getting to know myself better, this working through my baggage type stuff, so it doesn't clog up my day like a million balloons, you know? And I could hear it in your voice there, Stefan, that you're tired. I think I know who you are, actually. I know that you work in the healthcare field, and you probably are under like a lot of pressure all the time. And it's easy to justify going and just getting sloshed or whatever when you've worked really hard and had a rough day and all that. That rewarding yourself with booze or drugs or whatever else is a slippery one too. That's a real trap. And I would say, honestly, I know the answer. You need to get some hobbies, right? You need to start, not for you. You're not looking for my advice. I know, maybe you were. But for me, I realize instead of rewarding myself with booze or drugs or, you know, even a pack of cigarettes, you got to keep it going. You feel good about the day that you just had? Why not feel good about the evening you're about to have tomorrow morning? Guaranteed, when you wake up the next morning and you drank a Mickey of whiskey and had like 5 beers and ended up, you know, watching porn to 3 in the morning, messaging ex-girlfriends or something, you're not going to feel good the next morning. And that's all there is to it. You got to keep on making decisions in the now that are going to please your future and keep you on stable footing. I know this. Everybody knows this. I tell you, it's much harder to go through the type of day most of us go through than it is to just stop in our evenings or in our afternoons or mornings, whenever it is that you fall off whatever wagon it is that you're trying to stay on. It's much easier just to stay on that wagon than it is to have done the things that you were forced to do during the day. Like, I remember having to work 12-hour shifts and then getting up the next day and then getting called in and I'm taking the bus. I'm not getting paid well. My mindset is, but I'm pushing myself just to do it because I know I have a responsibility to do it. I have to do it. And if I'm willing to do that for a place that doesn't care about me, like your job, usually, right? Or the, why can't I do it for myself? And it's not so much a substance abuse issue as it is a caring about yourself issue. As it is about looking out for yourself and being in connection with yourself and sacrificing for yourself. Sure, the booze will make you feel good in the evening, but and you might say to yourself, okay, I'm going to sacrifice how I feel tomorrow morning to feel good right now. That is a sacrifice, I guess, for yourself. But I mean, if you could sacrifice that evening, not go and do those things. Just try to go for a walk, read a book. You gotta get busy. And it's all about, for me at least, every morning when I wake up, I look around And I check my head, and I check my memory, and I say, did I drink last night? Did I smoke a bunch of cigarettes last night? You know, did I fucking make all these kind of mistakes? And if I didn't, the day, you know, we have a real chance here on this day. Get up. Go out there into your back room, wherever it may be. Just make yourself a tea, a coffee. Sit, look out the window, meditate, plan. Just get that first foot down and then work to get the other feet in front of you as well. And I'm not there yet. I'm working towards it. I hope that you enjoyed this first episode of Waking Up with Jack Luna. Again, like I said, I'll try to do it once a week, depending on how I feel. This is my way of gluing together the episodes of Dark Topic that have been so sporadic here. But my goal is twice a month and try to keep relevant here with these episodes that hopefully will get better as time goes on. Eyes cocked, doors locked, stay paranoid. Thank you for being, I guess, when I say hello out there, I'm always just speaking out into the ether. I'm thankful to have this medium or this option to be able to sit and just try to work some of this stuff out and openly. I'm not very good at it yet, but I'll come back and try again. Thank you so much for waking up with me, and I hope you have a good day.